All right, so this week, Seth is joining us again from Germany, but that's the last week, right?
Yep, I'm leaving for the U.S. tomorrow, today in Berlin.
Excited?
Yeah, it'll be nice to sleep in my own bed for once.
Yeah, and for me, if I sound a little bit weird, is because I am very sick right now. I did catch something again on my way to the Porschenwieling in Niagara Falls. I'm feeling a little better today, but the last 2 days have been pretty rough. But I did get to see the Porsche Taycan production version in person. And I was pretty impressed by the car, by the design. We knew that it was going to be toned down from the Mission E. And the Mission E was almost universally loved for its design. And it, you know what? Wasn't that much toned down. It was a little bit, for sure. But less so than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I wasn't able to see it live like you. For some reason, my invitation in Berlin must have got lost in the mail, which is okay because I got to go for an extra day at the bike show in Friedrichshafen in the south of Germany. But from everything I saw, it is a beautiful car. I don't know how it feels inside. I don't know how much room is inside. I think they didn't show too much of that stuff. But
we could sit inside. We were able to sit inside. Yeah.
How was the back seat?
Nah, not great. Yeah, if you're over 6 feet tall, it's not going to be an ideal situation to be on the back seat. Not roomy at all. Look at the car from the exterior. It's extremely sleek looking. And the back is too. So if you want to sit straight, your head's going to hit the roof. But it's very much a driver's car. Driver's seat, the passenger seat too is okay, like the same thing. But for that, the interior feels very luxurious. It looks a lot like what we've used to with Porsche. Of course, the version that they had there was the Turbo and the Turbo S, the two higher-end version of the car, which what they're going to start with the production. And the only reveal the spec about those cars, we don't know the base spec, that's going to come out later and probably next year. But that Turbo S, you also have an optional passenger screen. So basically you have like three screens that almost melt into one large screen from the dash, the instrument cluster to the center dash, all the way to the passenger side. Very beautiful. Didn't have much time to play with the interface, the touchscreen interface, but the little time I had with it wasn't super great at the responding time. It wasn't very responsive. It was almost reminiscent of the Jaguar I-Pace interface that I complained a lot about. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt so far, but I'd like to spend more time with it to see if it's really as bad as I thought it would be. But again, I cannot, like, don't quote me on that. I spent literally like 20 seconds on it. I spent more time about all the design feature on the exterior of the car. Got to see the front trunk for the first time. Decent. Maybe not like Model S, Model X size, but more like Model 3. Maybe a little bit smaller than Model 3. The trunk, they did a pretty good job to optimize the trunk opening. I mean, it's not a hatchback. It's still like a, what do you call that style that you have on the Model, like the Model 3? Just a regular trunk opening, whatever. It is pretty, they optimized it on the sides and everything, so it's pretty large. But the actual volume cargo space, not that great either. There's a little second compartment that you can open. That's about big enough to fit your wall connector. Not much more than that. Wall connector is 11 kilowatts.
That's good.
Not sure it's standard, though. Like, we're starting to look at the options and everything. That's where it gets crazy with the Taycan. They go deep in the option, even like DC fast charging, or at least the fast charging on the 800-volt system is an option. Everything is an option, basically. So the price runs up pretty quick. And that price might have been the biggest surprise of the whole thing, because the specs, we already had a good idea about. They're talking about 280 miles of range. though that's WLTP, so it's going to be a little bit shorter than that for the EPA. Though they did release a new like a range testing, and it shows like 270 real world mileage that they had. So I don't know. They didn't release the speed they were driving that test. So anyway, you have Turbo and Turbo S, and the Turbo start at $150,000, which was what we were expecting to like a fully equipped Taycan to be. But you don't have the top speed with the 2.8 seconds acceleration. That's also a new spec that came out this week. Before that, Taycan was really like not Taycan, but Porsche was just saying faster than 3.5. Wasn't saying much more than that. It's actually faster than 3 seconds. It's 2.8. But that is with a Turbo S, which also has a slightly bigger wheels, 22-inch, I think. That car starts at about $180,000, and you can run it up to over $200,000 with all the options. So it's not cheap. So yeah, if you put all that together, sorry, are you still with me, Seth?
Yep.
Because I still see you like going in and out of the thing. It's I think it's lagging a little bit. Anyway, the kind of inevitable comparison with the Model S came out, and if you just look at like on paper, spec for spec, the Taycan doesn't look good, like at all.
It's actually surprisingly not good. I thought, especially what we didn't really know much about the two-gear gearbox. You would think with a gearbox like that, it would have with a lower gear, it would have a better 0-60 time. It with a higher gear, it should also have a higher top speed. You would think. Both of those, the Tesla Model S, P100D from whatever.
Is not better. Almost Model S performance.
Right. And with ludicrous mode, obviously, with the 0-60 time. But it's just weird because with a gear, like the whole point of a gearbox is to give you the ability to go 0-60 faster with a low gear, and then with the high gear to go to a higher
top speed.
Right. Yeah. And, that's what Rimac is doing. They want to beat the Roadster, so they put in a two-speed gearbox. I believe because Rimac did that with the Concept 2, I think the Batista is going to have a two-speed gearbox because it's basically the same car inside. So it was really surprising that Porsche didn't hit either of those benchmarks that Model S has gotten. And then, on top of that, the Model S sedan with the 100 kilowatt hour engine can go for 340 miles of range. And it's a sedan. It's not like a low sports car. So it was surprising that Porsche didn't even hit 300 miles. I guess with the gearbox, maybe you lose some efficiency there, but it was, and also Porsche has monster wheels. So that's going to not be great for efficiency. Rolling resistance will be higher. But the car itself is quite, has a quite low drag coefficient. It's lower on the ground than the Model. Yeah. And it's lower on the ground than the Model S. So these numbers were a little confusing to me. And, when I kind of stepped away from it and, read about what people were saying on Twitter, it was like, this is really hard for companies like Porsche and before Jaguar and Audi and everybody else, because Tesla is so far out ahead in specs. And that's not to say anything of the appearance of the Porsche. It's nothing to do with how it drives, but in terms of electric powertrain, Tesla is so far out ahead of the game that it's, these Porsche in particular has always been kind of a specs driven thing. Like the 918 Spyder has been like the fastest car ever off the line. It just, these 0-60 times top speed, those kind of things are kind of what Porsche brags about when they advertise their car. At this point, like they can't say they're the fastest car, and they're like the Model S is a big sedan. Like, you can't even beat a big sedan. So the point of my story was that it's going to be hard for other EV makers to come in and kind of match Tesla because they're so far ahead of the game in terms of those specs. But there's other ways to differentiate, and I think Porsche is making an attempt to do that.
All right. So can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, because Jitsi is really not doing a good job right now. Okay. So I look disconnected right now on the thing. But yeah, I agree with you for the most part, but you brought up the driving pleasure thing. And I mean, here's the way I see it. If someone is looking for the best electric car right now on the market, probably not the Taycan, you should probably go with the Tesla. If you're looking for the best Porsche on the market, I think the Taycan just became the best Porsche.
Oh, yeah. The flagship
Porsche. Yeah. So, if they did manage to, and that's what they claim, to keep the Porsche soul with the Taycan, with the non-electric powertrain, then if you're a Porsche fan looking to buy a new Porsche, look at the Taycan. Looks like... looks like it might be the best option right now if you want to buy a Porsche. So I think they're still going to find a decent diamond for it. Will it be the 40,000 number that they were throwing around in the past few months? Because originally they were talking about 20,000 units. I would thought that was already good for Porsche, which is a relatively small automaker. A 20,000 unit program per year is big for them. Then they saw the reservation number, like over 30,000 or something, and they were like, oh, maybe we could raise that up to 40,000 units per year. That'd be hard, in my opinion. But I still think it will sell well. And they're going to have cheaper version coming out, and then a bunch of people, I think, are going to want that car just for the look of it.
Right. It is a good-looking car.
So if you can get it for, I don't know, just a rear-wheel drive version, for $90,000, something like that, I think that would sell out too.
You don't get those wheels though for on the low end, right? That those wheels will become in the high end.
Yeah, I don't know. We know nothing of the specs of the lower end version yet. That will probably come out next year. But yeah, Porsche also today announced the production date is going to officially start September 9. So that's next week. I'm sorry.
And then when do they anticipate the first deliveries to be made?
I would assume it would be soon after in Europe. But the car is not expected until early next year in North America. So it's going to be a while before we see it here. All right. So we just talked about how everyone is comparing it to the Tesla Model S. And if you look at just the specs, sure, the Model S looks like it's beating it everywhere. Porsche, before the launch, had been pushing this idea of sustainable power output that they said that's the weakness of Tesla. They specifically pointed out Tesla on that front, and they said that the Taycan is going to beat Tesla on sustainable power output, which means either multiple 0 to 60 launch consecutively. I don't know in what kind of situation you would do that, but they said they could beat Tesla there.
It seems like a very, very, very edge case. Like,
yeah, yeah. A more useful case would be on the track, which that's fair. Porsche driver do sometimes bring their car to track. Less so for Tesla drivers, though there's some events now that like Tesla Corsa and things like that are coming up that might change that. On the Autobahn, so of course Porsche is a German company, they have a big market in Germany, and they have the Autobahn in Germany where you can push your car to its limit. So the Model S will, if you push it at the top speed for too long, will go into a low power mode and will limit the power output. And of course, the efficiency goes down. But I think the Porsche taken, the efficiency will also go down a lot in high speed. So that's more not really the idea. I assume the idea is that you could get that 162 mile per hour top speed for a longer, an extended period of time without the car going into lower power mode. Their claim to that, why they were so good, well, an example of it that they wanted to show was the Nürburgring track that they did a. They claim, that was a week or two ago, they claim the fastest four-door all-electric sports car. It's a pretty specific type of record to get on the Nürburgring track. But that time was 7 minutes 42 seconds, which is a pretty good time regardless of that. How specific is that record? Because that record, I mean, there's not that many cars available today that would be considered a four-door all-electric sports car. Tesla Model S and Model 3 would fit that description, though not necessarily a sports car, but whatever.
Yeah, and Porsche, you know, Porsche makes a couple other, like the Panamera or whatever.
Yeah.
Four-door sports car.
All-electric, though. They did say also all-electric.
Right.
So, Elon, yesterday, he made a few comments about the Porsche, like laughing at them about the fact that they are calling their car Turbo and it's an electric car. But right after that, he did say that he's going to bring a Model S to the Nürburgring racetrack next week. So he didn't outright say that it's to beat Porsche new record, but the timing of it sounds like it's clear that's what he wants to do. We've seen a bunch of Model S on the Nürburgring track, but I don't think we've never seen like someone actually trying to do like a fastest time, especially since. You know, in driving days, sometimes the track is quite busy. Also, not necessarily a pro driver. Porsche, of course, utilized a pro driver for that record. And we certainly haven't seen a new Model S with the new Raven motor.
Right. That's it. What's interesting, because the Raven motor is supposed to be more efficient. Theoretically, maybe it uses less battery. Less battery means that, the overheating would be less. And, you know, Tesla could make a track version of the Model S with, you know, extra cooling, theoretically. Or
well, a track mode, really.
Yeah, and, I mean, you can do other stuff like freeze the batteries beforehand or cool off the batteries, you know, with dry ice or something. I mean, there's lots of tricks to do. I don't know if that's something Tesla was thinking about. But we even got a tip that... Tesla may, or well, it was just speculation, but like, what if Tesla was doing the Nürburgring without a driver, you know, with like either a remote or, you know, on autopilot? I think that's probably a little crazy, but
yeah, that would require a lot of testing. Like,
yeah, you
have to do it a bunch of times to really get that perfect time. But right. Also, Elon says that next week, but Nürburgring apparently said that there is no track time available for a record attempt until the rest of the season. So
that seems like something that you know the right amount of money and talking to the right people could get you
through. Yeah.
I mean, early morning, late in night, whatever, like somebody you can handle it.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprising, really. But also wouldn't be surprising if Elon talked too fast.
Yes.
All right, moving on. Well, moving on. Do you think the Model S can beat the Taycan?
I don't think stock is prepared to do that, and I just think that Tesla didn't build the type of cooling system for the batteries that the Nürburgring requires, because nobody's doing that. Like. Maybe on the Autobahn, people are driving like that, but for the most part, people aren't driving in such a way that you would need the type of cooling that the ring requires.
Yeah, but because for people who don't know, like the Nürburgring track is like a 20-kilometer long track, and it allows for a lot of high speed, basically. Like, there's a lot of turns, of course, too, but there's a lot of stretch where you can drive really fast for a relatively long period of time. So, I mean, you do complete a 20-kilometer long track in 7 minutes, so it's pretty fast.
Yeah. So, you know, the question because I don't think a stock Model S could be that time. But I also think there's a lot of things that you could do to a Model S that Tesla, you know, clearly has some R&D going on in that field. So maybe they bring out a special Model S with, you know, better cooling, maybe, you know, super high output, maybe, you know, whatever. But I think Tesla can build a car that would beat that. I mean, I'd be interested to see what that Roadster would do on the ring.
Yeah, the Roadster would probably beat it. But I think also a Model S Raven could probably beat the time, not by a lot, or get at least very close to it. So it wouldn't be like that big and impressive, but it would be like a slap in the face of Porsche after they've been like, after they already got a slap in the face on the specs on paper. And now the only thing that they really had over Tesla, like nope, you don't have that either. I mean, they had a few other things, like they did like the 0 to 90 to 0 that they claim is faster, but I mean, I would have to assume that Porsche actually did all those tests also with the Model S first to
right. We know that Porsche bought a Model S to make sure that.
Well, they bought a few of them too.
Right,
we've seen them. We've seen them testing them. All right, moving along. Tesla battery cell manufacturing. We've been talking about that for a few months now, especially since the shareholders meeting where JB, Drew Baglino, and Elon were all talking about it, and they all but confirmed really that Tesla plans to build its own battery cells in the near future. This week, we published a report based on some job listing from Tesla. And one of those job listing was for a cell manufacturing job, a manufacturing technician in a cell manufacturing team. And in the job listing, Tesla writes, "Tesla is currently seeking a technician for a manufacturing line we are developing. You'll be part of a new product line we are developing." And it lists a bunch of responsibility related to battery cell manufacturing, which leads us to believe that Tesla is indeed building a new manufacturing line for battery cell, and that job listing is for Fremont, California, too. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's a Fremont factory. Tesla's a bunch of other locations in Fremont, but Tesla is building a battery cell manufacturing line in Fremont. So that's interesting. And another listing for a cell technician was more related to the R&D manufacturing of cells prototype, battery cell prototype. But what was particularly interesting about this listing is that it was for Broomfield, Colorado. And Tesla doesn't officially have any location in Broomfield, Colorado. And it looks clearly that they were working here in the battery lab. Like, we're talking about the job. In the job listing, this is like 90% of the responsibility is about making electrode prototypes and battery cell prototypes. So very much a battery lab that Tesla would have in Colorado. Some digging might appear that it might be related to their acquisition of Maxwell. Maxwell had a relationship with the University of Denver. And Broomfield is sort of a suburb of Denver. So that might be it. I don't know, Seth, you had another theory too?
I don't know we had a very reliable source who gave us good information in the past tell us that previous to Maxwell, Tesla had been doing some partnership research with the University of Colorado at Boulder, a lab there, which eventually turned into a company called Solid Power.
Yeah.
And the kind of the lab grew out of the University of Colorado at Boulder, and now it's nearby, very close to where the job description was. And they're doing solid state battery stuff. Just kind of doing some back research on it. They're doing, you know, there was an article about them that said they were doing solid state battery that could double the range of electric cars. So it might be, this might be, you know, kind of like, what's his name? Jeff Dahm? Dahm's lab in
Halifax.
Halifax. Maybe this is one of their kind of external research labs where they kind of really, like, really far out technologies. They kind of develop that stuff and bring it into more of the mainstream. That's kind of what I was thinking this is about. But the fact that it's actually a Tesla job makes me think that there might be more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're digging. We'll figure out what's going on over there.
Yeah. But the other job in Fremont more clearly states that Tesla is working on the manufacturing line for battery cells in California. So that's good news.
So why are they doing that in California and not in Nevada?
Because the battery cell production in Nevada is Panasonic's territory. In Gigafactory 1, I mean.
Okay, so they're doing it so they can do it by themselves or with Maxwell.
Yeah.
And Panasonic owns all the giga, you know, any batteries that are made in Nevada.
Yeah, Tesla's a deal that the batteries made at Nevada, Gigafactory 1, are made by Panasonic and sold to Tesla. All right. Do we have any vegan listeners? You can get now a Model 3 completely vegan interior, litter-free. Tesla announced that this weekend. And then through Lenny Munter, who's a longtime Tesla owner, EV advocate, and race car driver too, who happens to be vegan, she confirmed this week that Tesla actually offers retrofits for the... I should back up. The main thing that wasn't vegan in the Model 3 was the steering wheel, because the rest was already pretty much vegan. Of course, Tesla pre-Model 3, I think. Yeah, pre-Model 3, Tesla changed all the sealing, all the interior option to this synthetic leather thing that they developed that's not real leather. So that was already done. Though they always kept the same... for the Model S and X, they were using like this Mercedes-Benz steering wheel that was leather, though they did have like a custom option, like off the menu item that you could order, that was non-leather. So you could get the interior of a Model S or X vegan. You couldn't do that with the Model 3 because the Model 3 was a different steering wheel that I think Tesla makes themselves. Pretty sure Tesla makes themselves. Anyway, now they made a vegan option. And it's not only for new cars, but it is now. All new cars are made with that. But you can also get a retrofit for $600, which I'm not sure why you would do, really, because the damage is already done. The old steering wheel
is... The cow's already dead.
And I mean, I assume you keep your wheel, too. Like, it's a new... It's not because it's damaged or anything, So it's like you still have the wheel, so you have to to sell the other one or donate it or whatever.
Do you think it's a new wheel, or they just rip off the stitches and put on new?
Well, for $600, I hope it's a new wheel,
right?
Because that's not that's expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I guess some people are kind of grossed out by the fact that you're holding animal skin, so maybe that.
Yeah, that's a good point. But Lenani did give her an explanation for it. She said, and I quote, "I understand the cow does not come back to life." Okay, good point. However, 8 years ago when I went vegan, I donated all leather items, shoes, etc. I don't want anything made from animals. I don't expect everyone to make this choice. But for me, it was really important ethically. I love my Tesla and love animals. That's fair.
Yep.
All right, this morning we posted a new a new patent application for Tesla. And I mean, Tesla's a pretty high-tech company. They apply for patents all the time. So most of it is related to batteries, related to autonomous driving, related to solar cells, related to very high-tech stuff. This time is for wipers, a new wiper patent, but not just any kind of wiper, an electromagnetic wiper. Looks pretty cool. We have never seen it, but we've seen some drawing of the system, and it basically consists of a block of magnets that sits underneath the hood of the car, like a lot of wipers these days, because people don't want to see wipers anymore. Wipers are not cool anymore. They're outset. So I hope you don't show your wipers. They are hidden now underneath the hood of the car, but they deploy a little bit when they go out. And I you've seen mostly on luxury vehicles, but now I feel like it's going to a lot of different vehicles too. The Model 3s are pretty hidden. Model S too. X too, of course. Like Tesla's already doing that a lot, but it's more complex. The Bolt, is the Bolt wiper, is it? No, the Bolt, I think you see them.
Yeah, remember? I mean, they're kind of buried in a little bit. The Bolt, I think one of my cars is weird because one of the wipers is very small. And then the other wiper is big. I can't remember if that's the Bolt or the Model S. But anyway.
Anyway, this one, it would be easier to hide it because of that, because it's just one wiper that just deploys straight up. And when it deploys, it's also, since it's just one wiper and it's not fixed, it travels all around that block of electromagnet. You just need like one perfect curve that follows the curve of the windshield. Since it doesn't go up and down on the windshield, it just go left and right. You can have it match perfectly the curve of the windshield, so it cleans better. It's easier to hide. And in the patent, Tesla also argues that it consumes less energy. So that's something that I thought about, but apparently, mechanical parts. And the friction in a regular conventional wiper consumes a lot of energy. I'd like to know the percentage of it, but is it in the patent application, they literally say it reduced the range. So they think their electromagnetic wiper is going to be more efficient, and it will also break less, they think. So something to keep in mind, of course, is when a company applies for a patent, doesn't mean that they necessarily think about, well, they do think about it, but not necessarily that it will ever come to production. However, I did a little more digging on this, and I looked into there's three inventors listed on this patent, three Tesla engineers, Meteria Kitambari, Gonzalo Espinosa Graham, and Nikola Clift. And all those people are in their profile, in their LinkedIn profile, they are all mechanical engineers. And they list designing, developing, and validating exterior electromechanical system for Tesla vehicles. And one of them, Graham, specifically says that they are developing systems to be introduced in Model S, X, and 3. So I don't know. Maybe they will actually deploy that in Tesla vehicles. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that they could definitely use. It's not like that far out there.
Mm-hmm. All right, the F-150 electric pickup truck. Ford has been talking a little bit more about it lately. They unveiled a prototype a few weeks ago with their whole million-pound towing of a train wagons. This week, what they're doing is they launched this type of I'm confusing two things. Now, this week in an interview with Autocar for this Team Edison leader, like they made like this little team that works on electric vehicles at Ford, and they call it Team Edison. Darren Palmer, he confirmed that the F-150 is planned for before 2022. So when they unveiled that prototype a few weeks ago, they were still saying like in the coming years. They've always been unclear with the timeline. There was never a clear timeline. Now it's before 2022. So I would assume 2021, which should place it around the same time as the Tesla pickup truck.
And Rivian.
Rivian is supposed to be end of 2021, 2020.
Yeah.
Would it be too surprising if it slips to 2021?
Right.
The other thing I wanted to say about Ford is the Mustang inspired electric crossover.
Ugh, that thing is ugly.
That thing is covered in camouflage, Seth. Given a chance.
I know, but that's so much. Front grill looks just absurd.
Yeah, because there's like two types of camouflage on top of it. So you cannot base anything on this. But they did share some pictures of it testing. And what I was going to say to earlier is that they did release this like EV Mythbuster type of YouTube series and a blog post too, where they try to show like some old myth about EVs where you cannot use them in the winter and stuff like that. And so to dispel that, they released some footage of them doing some winter testing for the upcoming Mustang-inspired crossover. That's going to be the very first all-electric car from Ford. There's a Ford Focus EV and whatnot, but the first non-conversion EV from Ford, like a vehicle on a new platform meant to be electric from the ground up. And yeah, to your point, Seth, we don't get to see much more than the form factor size. It looks like a small SUV or crossover type deal. But yeah, any type of... you could see that the hood is quite aggressive. It's short and there's wide difference between the hood and the fenders. But yeah, it's covered in camouflage, so... Not much easier than that. All right. Available U is going to start offering electric conversion for classic Beetles and maybe other cars too. Next week at the Frankfurt Auto Show, they're going to unveil their first prototype of an old Beetle with basically with the new E-Hop powertrain inside. So the E-Hop has a new powertrain with a 36.8 kilowatt hour battery pack. They say that that's good enough not for the E-Hop, but in a converted Beetle, it's good for 200 kilometers of range, which is not bad for an EV conversion. Like you exactly. don't, yeah, it's an EV conversion, guys. So you cannot expect that much range. And a 36.8 kilowatt hour battery pack fitted into like the prototype appears to be like a 2-door convertible Beetle from the 60s, I guess. I don't know. I'm not that good at that. Like I've never been like the biggest fan of the Beetle.
Yeah, maybe so, 70s. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know about the ground effect. There's definitely some other things being done to this car.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the Beetle's actually a pretty good car to convert anyway. Like I think quite a few people have done this. Just generally speaking, the Beetle and also the VW vans,
mm-hmm.
Or the minibuses.
And they do list the minibuses as a potential future one to convert. But the idea of it, you're right. Other people have done it, but they've done it like in one-offs type of deal. Or right. If they do offer it as a service, it's extremely expensive. It's not really streamlined. The idea here is that VW could streamline it by they are literally using existing part that they make for the E-Up. So that's easy there. And then they partner up with a company called E-Classics in near Stuttgart. So there's way to streamline things and make probably reduce cost a little bit. But they didn't confirm a price for it, but we are hearing something like $60,000 or something like that. So it's still not cheap.
Insane.
So it is really if you have a classic VW and you really want it to be electric. I feel like maybe some companies can do it cheaper. I wouldn't be surprised.
They could make a new Beetle for $60,000.
Yeah. But at the same time, like a company like we would often use like salvage battery packs, battery modules and things like right. that. So you do get new components there. So that's a positive. So again, they said the bus, they might do the bus. They might also do a Porsche 356.
Yeah.
All right. But what we're really looking forward to from Volkswagen is the ID.3. That's supposed to be the car that changed everything for Volkswagen, going electric with the first car on the MEB platform. That's going to be a platform that's on which VW expect to make millions of electric vehicles per year over the next, by 2025, really. Now, I did post this article earlier this morning, and I just got confirmation from VW about that. So we're gonna update that. I'll make a new, maybe make a new article, because I think that's that kind of buried the lead here. They announced that they build 400 ID.3's car, and volume production should start in November. So they are preparing. The big deal here is, of course, Zyko. That's a plant in Germany where they are currently producing 300,000 gasoline cars per year, and they are converting that to all electric production, and starting with the ID.3. So, however, in that post today, in that press release that they sent about starting production for the ID.3, because the ID.3 is going to be, the production version is going to be unveiled next week. So next week, we see the car, the production version. Then November production starts. But then I saw in the post that they say the first deliveries are planned for the summer of 2020.
That's crazy. That's like a year from now.
Yeah. So now I'm like, whoa, is that the someone made a mistake in the press release or something? That makes no sense. Start production in November, summer 2020. Like, so that's like 6-7 months at least between start of production and start of deliveries. So I reached out to VW, and VW were like, no, we said that before. Like, you missed it. Like, yeah, I missed it, because that's a big deal. So I'm like, I asked, like, what's happening during those seven months? And they said that they said there's a complexity to switching from gasoline production to electric car production. I'm like, okay, that's fair, but then why are you saying you're starting production in November? And then they say, we will start production in November, but we're going to accumulate volume. They want to accumulate volume through the summer of 2020 and then start deliveries.
That's a weird statement to me.
Yep, it is.
I mean, no car company wants to accumulate volume. Like, inventory is not a good thing to have. If somebody wants to buy a car and they're just accumulating volume, like, that's a really stupid decision. I think
they have 30,000 reservation for it.
Right.
And they said that they are, in the same statement, they said they were still committed to producing 100,000 ID.3 next year in 2020. So that means, like, if on average, like, the first 6 months, there are like 50,000 cars going to be sitting on. Really? You want to know my guess?
Yeah.
Won't be the batteries in a lot of those cars are going to be produced there. A lot of that volume.
Yep.
Batteries going to need to be added later.
That is a good guess, I think. That's probably the problem.
Yeah. So it's something, it's a new story that we're going to keep an eye on, because I was really surprised by it. I'm going through Europe at the end of the year. We're spending a few months in Europe, and I was planning to see, like, there's a few cars I want to see while in Europe that want test drive. The Taycan was one of them. I knew the Taycan's not going to be in the U.S. until next year, so I'm like, oh, maybe I can get a seat in it if I go to Europe. I wanted to try the new Honda E. I wanted, like, a few of those cars that are only going to be in Europe, and the ID.3 was on top of my list, but now I'm like, I won't be able to sit in that until next year. That's crazy. Well,
you could sit in one, but the car won't have a battery, probably.
Yeah, all right. I mean, I'm sure they're going to make a few, too. Like, they already have 400 of them. Maybe they can make me sit in those.
Yeah, I mean, they gave test drives to people.
Yeah, they did.
To European press in South Africa. Like, that was, like, a few months ago, so... Between that and...
Well, they did say they produced 400 of them. I'm just saying that probably they don't have the battery volume that match with it. Like,
right. Or maybe anyway, they thought they did, and maybe the price went up, or I think LG's their partner. LG said, well, we can't get it till summer or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. So thanks a lot for listening, everyone. We're going to see you next time, same place, next week. Ciao.